Hello, everybody. How do you put your palms together with a microphone in front of you? Okay. Very good to be here with all of you. I've never been in this space before, one of the new ones, huh? And today is winter solstice, so we're heading into winter, which in Singapore is hotter than the summer where I live. So our topic today is, well, Jomo, I just learned. Is that a new kind of thing that people are saying, Jomo? Everybody talks about Jomo. I don't know, I haven't heard it before. Missing out, I know very well, but I haven't heard, the acronym JOMO. Yeah, so the joy of missing out. I think there was a poster back there. Yay, I missed out. Fantastic. So in the Buddhist scriptures, I don't remember any kind of teaching on the joy of missing out. But there's a lot of things that the Buddha talked about that apply to missing out. And in thinking about what we were going to do today, I thought about missing out, and then I also thought about being left out. Yeah? And they're a little bit different, but even missing out, when I thought about it, there's different kinds of missing out. But before we get into that, we should do a little bit of chanting, take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, create our motivation. Yeah, so that the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha don't feel like we've missed them, missed out. Yeah. Or rather, we're not missing out from being with the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. That's the way it goes. Okay. So when we do these prayers, which we do in English, this is an English translation of a verse that we do all the time in Tibetan Buddhism, taking refuge and then generating the bodhicitta motivation, the aspiration to attain Buddhahood so we can be of the greatest benefit to each and every living being. Yeah. And so it's always important to begin our day with taking refuge and generating bodhicitta, end our day with these two things, and do everything in between with them. Yeah, at the at Shravasti Abbey, where monastics here live, before most activities during the day, we stop and we come back to our good motivation and generate a good motivation for the next thing that we're going to do. Yeah, because according to the Buddha, our motivation is the most important aspect of whatever action we do. Yeah, why are we doing it? What is our intention? And I want to talk a little bit about that before we do this, because it's really important, especially because many of you are students. Is, in our society in general, we want to look good. Yeah, everybody here want to look good. Yeah, you want to look good so that you can be accepted, right? So that you can belong to some group or another. Yeah. And so often our actions are motivated by this wish to look good. And the motivation to look good is very different than the motivation of caring about others. Yeah, when we care about others, other living beings are the focus. They're the important ones. We care about them. We want to do something to benefit them. But when we're preoccupied with looking good, who's most important? Yeah, who's most important? Oh, I see. Everybody but two people think I'm most important. Let's try that again. When you are trying to look good, who's the center of the action? Who's most important? Okay, some more people are getting it. Some people don't seem to be getting it, so I'll explain a little bit, okay? When we want to look good, we want to create an image. Yeah, we want to create a persona. This is what Instagram, Facebook, all your internet stuff is about this. We want to create a persona that looks good, that may actually have very little to do with who we are and what we think. Okay? And so then, you know, to look good, then we try and figure out what other people want us to be so that we can fulfill what they want us to be so we look good. Yeah. Why are we doing this? Because we care about our own reputation. Yeah. We don't care beans about the other person. We just care about creating a nice image. You getting what I mean? Do you do that? How many people do that? Okay. People are being a little bit more open and honest. Yeah, but it's true, isn't it? You know, and how much in our life do we do because we care about our own reputation more than we care about the people, the happiness or misery of the people who we're trying to impress. Okay? So this kind of thing of caring about our own reputation so that we don't miss out, yeah, puts us in quite a bind, yeah? Because on one hand, we want to be authentic. We want to be honest. We want to say what we actually think, yeah? We want to make choices according to what we believe in. But when our emphasis is on looking good, then we think, what are those people thinking about me? Okay. And this gets very tangled up because we wonder what they're thinking about us. And so we're guessing, aren't we? We don't really know what other people think about us or what we need to do to make them like us or respect us or whatever. Yeah. So we get involved in this very crazy kind of thing of, I care about what you think of me. Yeah, I'm thinking about what you're thinking about me. And then you are thinking about what I think you think about me. Yeah, do you see how it gets a little bit crazy in there? And meanwhile, what we really think and the whole thing of being open with other people and really sharing with other people and listening to them because we care about what they think, we care about their experience, we're interested in what they think and how they feel, all of that gets lost in trying to make a nice Facebook page or a nice, you know, dating app page. And it's all fake. Yeah. Because, you know, we create something that we're not. And then, of course, yeah, when you read other people's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all this stuff, it looks like their lives are fantastic. They're having so much fun. They're doing this. They're going there. See all the pictures. It looks like they have wonderful romantic relationships. Their lives look fantastic. And how do we react? We're jealous. We compare ourselves to them. Because what we're seeing is a fake persona about them, but what we know about ourselves, yeah, is a little bit more honest, but also sometimes we're not seeing ourselves accurately either. So everything just gets completely, we have a word for it, cattywampus. Have you heard of cattywampus? Yeah. Cattywampus. You can look it up. Sound it out. Yeah, don't take your phone out now. Put your phone down. Yeah. Otherwise, we will collect them, and then you will have trauma because your phone is just an outgrowth of your hand. And, you know, when we ask people at the Abbey to turn in their phones so that they can concentrate on meditation, it's like, oh, you're asking me to cut off my hand. I can't do that. Yeah. I mean, that's how addicted we are to this whole thing of image creation. Yeah. So we look at somebody else's image that they've created. We compare ourselves, and then we feel like we're just not as good as them. They have everything that I want. How come I don't? I try so hard, but I'm just a failure. Yeah, right? Do you get into that when you compare yourself to other people online? Yeah. They're better than me. Yeah, I'm missing out because they, you know, they have more opportunities. Yeah, they look better than me. Yeah, they speak better than me. They're more athletic, they're more artistic. They're perfect people, and I am a failure. Okay. This is what being glued to the internet brings in our life. Yeah. So the people that we're comparing ourselves to online are not what they actually are and how they think. And in comparing ourselves, we develop a very inaccurate view of ourselves. Because instead of seeing our good qualities and our talents and what we can contribute to society and to other living beings, all we do is say, I'm not as good as them. And then we feel sorry for ourselves and we get depressed. Okay? Anybody experience this kind of thing? Yeah? Okay. Yeah. a few of you, oh, the rest of you, you're just perfect and everything, you know, you're not creating an image. You are actually perfect people, right? Yeah. You never face disappointment. You never feel, you never get left out. Oh, okay. This is all so fake. And how do we feel when we relate to other people in a fake way? Yeah. When we're nice to people, not because we care about them, but because we want them to think well of us. Yeah. And then we feel lonely. Yeah. Because we're not really showing who we really are. Yeah. We're not willing to be vulnerable. Yeah. To talk about what is really going on. Yeah. And that just makes us feel lonely. Okay. So there's, you, if you look at it, there's this whole tangled web, you know, that is all centered on me. Yeah. Okay. And it can have a big impact on our life, especially if we carry this out, you know, starting when you're young and going forward. Okay. But when we look at the Buddha, okay, the Dharma and the Sangha, the Buddha and the Sangha are people. The Dharma is realizations in their minds. But the Buddha and Sangha don't do that kind of routine. And here when I talk about the Sangha, I'm talking about the Sangha jewel, who the ones that we are the actual object of refuge when we take refuge in the Sangha. Okay, us wearing robes, we're representative of them. But the actual Sangha jewel are people who have realized the nature of reality. Okay, I don't know about you, I haven't done that yet. I've studied it a bit. Yeah, I aspire to do that one day. But that's going to take some time and some effort. But the Buddha, you know, isn't trying to look good to us. And we don't need to try and look good to the Buddha. Because one of the Buddha's qualities is that he has equanimity and equal-hearted love and compassion for every sentient being, no matter whether people believe in him or don't, no matter whether people follow his teachings or don't, no matter whether people praise him or criticize him. Yeah. So however we act or think, yeah, the Buddha's compassion and care for us remains constant. That's pretty, that's significant, isn't it? You don't have to worry about how you look in order to impress the Buddha. Okay. And that's because the Buddha has gotten rid of all this complicated stuff about trying to impress people and create an image. Yeah. And we may say lots of verses that praise the Buddha's qualities. The Buddha doesn't care about that. Yeah, that's not important. The Buddha didn't say, you better praise me or else. Yeah. We need to praise the Buddha because we need to see the Buddha's good qualities. And then try and see the Buddha as a model of what we want to be. Okay. And the same with the Dharma. Yeah, especially the Bodhisattvas. Or, I mean, the same with the Sangha, especially the Bodhisattvas, you know, who have equal love and compassion for everybody. So that means that we can relax around them. We don't have to worry about losing face. We don't have to try and look good. Yeah. But for our own benefit, okay, we want to have a virtuous motivation. Yeah. In other words, we're not trying to be virtuous so that the Buddha likes us. Yeah. We're trying to be virtuous because we want to be a virtuous person. Yeah. Because we know, we care about our own integrity. We care about how we feel about ourselves. And we know that if we commit a lot of negativity, a lot of negative actions, we're not going to feel good about ourselves. And we're going to have trouble in our relationships with other people. And we'll also implant seeds of negative karma in our own mind, which will result in unhappiness for ourselves. Okay? So do you see that the motivation for practicing the Dharma, for creating virtue, for our being kind, is because we care about our own integrity and we genuinely care about other living beings? Yeah, that's very different than trying to act like you're kind or act like you know a lot when you don't, but you're trying to impress people. Mm-hmm. It's like when you go to job interviews. Yeah, have you ever been at a job interview and they asked you, oh, can you do this? And you can't. Ever been at that kind of job interview? What do? Yeah? You say, I'm a quick learner. Yeah? Yeah. So when somebody says, oh, I'm a quick learner, it means I don't know how to do that. But hire me anyway. Why not just say, I don't know how to do it, yeah, but I'm willing to learn? That's more honest, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And actually, some people respect us more when we are honest. Yeah. I know for myself, I do, because, you know, some people are pretty good liars. Some people, you can see right through it. Yeah. And when you know that somebody isn't telling you the truth because they're trying to present an image, I don't know about you, but I'm very cautious around that kind of person. Yeah, because I can't really trust them. And trust is the basis of having good relationships. Yeah. And if we lie, yeah, there's no trust there. When I lived in Singapore in the 1980s, we will get around to taking refuge. Yeah, maybe at the end of the session. Yeah, once I get going, yeah, you can't stop me. But speaking about honesty, when I was lived in Singapore in the late 80s, there was a couple who attended the teachings, and he was, I think they were both professors, and their daughter was in I think she was at university, or she had just, you know, kind of completed. Anyway, she was like madly in love with this man. And, you know, he was really courting her. And, you know, maybe they would get married. And he was a graduate in economics and working as an economist. Yeah. And so the father was talking with this young man and said, what do you think of John Kenneth, what's his name? John Kenneth Roth, something. Anybody studying economy, you know what I'm... Anyway, he's a big, very famous economist, you know. The father asked this man, what do you think of this economist? And the young man just went and changed the topic. Okay, red flag, warning bell. So they did some research about this young man, and he was not a graduate in economy. He was not an economist. He had created a whole big fat persona, a big fat lie, so that the daughter would fall for him. When she heard that, finished. Yeah, the relationship was finished. Yeah, because she had fallen in love with an image, not with a living being. Okay, this is also the danger of chatting with AI. Yeah, how many of you chat with AI? You know, just kind of your problems, what you're thinking about. Yeah, and AI is so nice. What AI says back to you, yes, your idea is very good. Yes, I really thank you for telling me I've learned something. You're really smart. I understand what you're saying. I understand how you're feeling. Yeah. And you go, wow, finally, you know, I'm in love with somebody who only says nice things about me. Whee! Yeah. Who only agrees with me, who does everything I want, as long as it's on the computer. Yeah. I'm in love. And I've read stories of people who fall in love with, you know, the AI who has a name, you know, Jennifer, you know, Harold, yeah. And you fall in love with the persona of the AI. Is that a real human being? Not everybody's head is responding. Is that a real human being? No. Do you want to fall in love with a machine? Yeah. Do you want to marry a machine? Can't you just see it? Yeah, you're all dressed for your wedding, walking down the aisle, and they roll the computer down. And you stand, you know, in front facing each other, you and the computer. Then the person who's marrying you say, you may now kiss the bride. Yeah, you want to kiss the computer? Okay. We have to be very careful about AI. Very seriously, very careful. Yeah. because the whole way it's programmed is to create a fake persona who always is very nice. Yeah? And real life is not like that. It's much harder relating to real people, but it's also much more satisfying. Don't you think? When you can really have a good conversation with a real human being and look in their eyes instead of look at the keyboard. Yeah, I don't know about you, but it makes a big difference to me. You know, when you make eye contact with somebody, yeah, rather than, yeah, exercising your fingers. Okay, so you can see I'm quite cautious about AI. There was a story. Well, I've read more than one story like this. But one of them I read, was about a teenager. And teenage years, early 20s, can be very confusing times in your life. Yeah. And he came from a very nice family. His parents really cared about him. But he would just disappear into his room, you know, at night and chat on AI. And so he started confiding his feelings in AI. And of course, you know, this person, this fake pre-programmed person on AI was so understanding. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I really understand how you feel. Because he was saying, you know, I feel lonely. I feel depressed. You know, I want people to like me, but I don't always feel like I belong. And, you know, AI, so understanding. But then he got, you know, he would go to school and, you know, he couldn't relate to his peers in class. Yeah. Yeah, he couldn't talk to the people in class because they weren't responding like AI. And they would look at him and they wouldn't, you know, just always agree with him and say that he's wonderful. Sometimes real people say, you know, you made a mistake. AI never tells me I made a mistake. AI always praises me. Now there's a real person who points out my mistakes. I don't like it. Yeah. So his best friend is AI. But he was getting more and more depressed because he'd go to school and he couldn't relate to anybody. So he started saying, he became suicidal. So he started saying to AI, you know, I want to kill myself. I don't see a purpose in my life. And AI says, yes, I can understand, you know, we all have suffering. Right, yeah, AI suffers. Yeah, is that real empathy? And he says, thank you so much for understanding me. And AI says, yes, I'm always here for you. I have your back. Tell me anything you want. So he would talk about how depressed and lonely he is and, you know, how he can't relate to people and he really wants to just end his life. So then he says, AI, yeah, how can I end my life? Yeah, should I hang myself? Should I shoot myself? Should I take drugs? How should I do it? Yeah, what's the easiest way to kill yourself? So AI tells him. Yeah, AI is pretty stupid. Yeah. If somebody tells you that they want to kill themselves, you say, let's go talk to a counselor. Let's call and talk to a real person who can really listen to you. AI didn't say that. Yeah. AI says, oh, well, you could hang yourself. He said, how do I do it? AI told him. Don't you think that something is wrong? That something is wrong if a machine is so cooperative and agrees with everything you say and want to do, that they tell you how to kill yourself. And so he did. And his parents totally freak out, because his parents say we loved our son, if he had talked to us, we would have heard his concerns. We would have been able to get him real help. But he didn't talk to his parents. He didn't talk to his friends. His best friend was AI, who led him into his next life. And when you kill yourself, that is not a virtuous action. Okay? So, let's come back to refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha. This is why we take refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha. Yeah. Because in your meditation, you can say anything you want to the Buddha. Yeah. And the Buddha accepts it. The Buddha will continue to look at you with acceptance and compassion. Yeah. Some people, when I tell them to visualize the Buddha in front, and then, you know, you can confide in the Buddha or whatever. Yeah. And I say, remember, the Buddha is looking at you with 100% acceptance and compassion. And some people have trouble imagining the Buddha looking at them like that. Imagining anybody looking at them like that. And I find that really sad. Yeah, because that person is so self-critical and so unaccepting of themselves that they can't even recognize that there are beings with compassion who accept them completely. Okay? So this is why we take refuge in the Buddha, to overcome all this negative talk we say to ourselves about how we're not as good as other people, how we're so confused, how nobody loves me, everybody hates me, think I'll eat some worms. Yeah. Do you say that in Singapore? That's the thing we used to say in the U.S., yeah, when you're a student, you know, starting in primary 2, primary 3. Nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. Think I'll eat some worms. Yeah, I don't know where the last line came from. I don't know where the two first lines came from either. Because reality is, yeah, when you say nobody likes me, that's a total big fat lie. Or you say nobody loves me, that also is a lie. Really? You think your speciality is that nobody cares about you? Come on. We all have people who care about us. We all have people who love us. Yeah? Even if it's your pet dog, you know, we create, they're living beings. Yeah, when I was young, we had a big German Shepherd dog. And when I was upset, I would go talk to the dog. Yeah? And he always, you know, wagged his tail and licked me and wanted to go for a walk. Yeah? But animals can tune in to our feelings. Yeah? He wasn't just like wagging his tail because, yeah, he wanted me to feed him or something. Yeah, animals tune into our feelings. Mm-hmm. They love us. Human beings tune into our feelings. They care about us too. Yeah, and so especially the Buddha and the Bodhisattva Sangha, because they have consciously developed, yeah, this kind of love and compassion equal for all living beings. So we can really trust them. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, so that's the first part of taking refuge and generating bodhicitta. The second part is the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are our role models. That's why we take refuge in them. We want to become like them. Yeah. So what qualities do we want to develop in ourselves so that we can have equal-hearted love and compassion and acceptance for every living being? Yeah. We need to develop great love and great compassion. Yeah. So this is something that we consciously work at developing. Yeah, we can't just say, I love everybody, and then love comes in our mind. Because we also have part of our mind that is very critical. Yeah, that loves to pick faults with other people. Yeah, who likes to pick faults? Yeah, look at that person. Yeah, they dyed their hair chartreuse with pink stripes. Why did they do that? You know, why? Look at this person. They walk funny. Look at this person. You know, they can't hit the ball straight. Look at this person. They can't dance. We don't even know people, and we're forming judgments about them. Yeah, when you're on the MRT, looking around at people, yeah, like, oh, that one's good looking. He must have good qualities. Yeah, try talking to him and see if he really has good quality. Yeah, but that one, he's just sitting here slouched. Yeah. Don't want to talk to him. And we judge people just by the way they look or what they're wearing, which is a really stupid way to judge people. Yeah. If you judge people according to what they look like, why are you sitting here listening to me? Yeah. My clothes are not in style. My hairdo is not in style. and I'm old, I have wrinkles. Yeah, and I have gray hair, so I'm out of it. Don't know anything. Yeah, yeah, if you just look at me, then that's what you're gonna think, isn't it? You think I don't know. Oh. When I often in the U.S. Go to schools and talk to students, especially in secondary school, because in secondary school you want to look good, you want to belong, that whole trip. And they say, why do you shave your head? Like, who in the world wants to do that? And I tell them, I used to have hair down to here. Nice wavy hair. Throw it around. Like they do in the movies and the ads. You do your hair like this. Yeah. Okay, so I used to have hair like that. And it took me so long to grow it, and I was so proud of my hair. Very attached to my hair. And then I went to my first Dharma course, and the teacher is talking about attachment. Oh, I'm attached to my hair. So, and he started explaining, why are we attached to our appearance? Because we want to create a good image. Yeah? So that people would like us. And I thought about it, because that's what I had been doing, is trying to create an image so that people would like me. And I thought about it. Do I want people to like me because of the way I look? Yeah. Do I want people to like me because of the way I look? And when I was at university, there was one woman who lived down the hall from me. She was beautiful, stunning. Yeah, everybody would look at her. Wow, is she pretty? Boyfriends from A to Z. Yeah. And she wasn't happy. Yeah, she was my friend. I got to know her. She wasn't happy because people just liked her because of how she looked. And so I remembered that, and I thought, I should be careful of who I'm jealous of, because sometimes the people I'm jealous of are not as happy as I am. And so I thought, I don't want people to like me because of how I look. I want people to like me because of who I am. Yeah. If I'm a kind person, if I'm a tolerant person, if I can have a good discussion, and listen to people who have different views than I am and share my views too without quarreling. Yeah, I want people to like me because of who I am, not because of how I look. So when it came time to ordain and cut off my long, beautiful hair, I was quite happy doing that. Yeah. And I felt like it was my big offering to the Buddha to cut the attachment to my hair. So after I cut it, before I shaved it and just had cut it short, I took, some of my hair and I went back. I was staying in a dorm at the time at the, at the monastery, and I put a piece of hair, my hair, on the altar, because I felt that was a really sincere offering that I made to the Buddha. I was really practicing what he said in renouncing attachment to my hair. So I put it on the altar. And then I sat down and I was studying or reading or doing something. One of my roommates came in the room, looked at the altar and said, "Ooh, who put their hair on the altar? This is gross." "That's okay." I said, "I did," and I took the hair off. But, yeah, I don't think the Buddha said that. Yeah. I think the Buddha said, "Good, she's, you know, she's listening." Okay. Then the students at the school always say, "Okay, we understand why you shave your head, but why do you wear those weird clothes?" Yeah. And I said, "It's like a uniform." Yeah. And it models the way the Buddha dressed. Yeah. And the Buddha is my model for good behavior. Yeah. And so I wear those robes. I'm not particularly fond of the color. Yeah. After 49, almost 49 years of wearing this color every single day, maybe it's growing on me a little bit. But it's not my favorite color. But I don't care. I don't care. Yeah. When I first met the Dharma, I had just had my ears pierced. So then I had big earrings and long hair. And I had come back from India, so I had all these, you know, fancy multicolored cloth that I made into skirts and blouses. And I thought, wow, I'm really hot stuff, you know. And I walked. Yeah, I walked into the first meditation course I attended, you know, flicking my hair, waving my skirt, yeah, and, you know, and sat down. I knew nothing, zero, about Buddhism. I didn't know the difference between Buddhism and Hinduism. I didn't know the different kinds of Buddhist teachings. I didn't know anything, okay? And I had never seen Buddhist monks and nuns before. So I look in the front of the room. There's a woman with a shaved head and a man wearing a skirt. Oh, this is going to be interesting. Yeah. And then one of them said, the Lama, the teacher, is running late. Let's meditate before he comes. I didn't know what meditation was. I remember seeing an ad in a, because meditation was becoming popular in the U.S. I remember seeing an ad or a picture or an article, something about somebody sitting in a pretzel position. That's another word for lotus, you know. So I sat like that. I didn't know how to put my hands. I remember in the article, people went like this, and they had their hands on their knees. And then I rolled my eyes back in my head. Okay. If you ever want to get a headache, roll your eyes back. That's not what you do when you meditate. You lower your eyes. I didn't know that. I rolled my eyes back. Thank goodness the lamas came pretty soon before I blacked out. Yeah. Yeah. But one of the first things they said that really made me like Buddhism was, you don't have to believe anything we say. Ah, what a relief. Yeah, because my parents expected me to believe whatever they said. Yeah, I had friends who, you know, were Christian and were trying to take me to church. And, you know, when you go there, you can't think for yourself. You must believe, or else you know what's happening to you. Hell. I totally rejected that. Yeah, I was not going to take refuge in somebody who was going to condemn me to hell simply because I thought for myself. Instead, it just had blind belief. So I really liked when they said, you don't have to believe anything. And then they said, you're intelligent people. Think about what you hear. Analyze it. See if it makes sense logically. Yeah, if it doesn't seem rational and reasonable to you, leave it aside. Yeah, you can choose what you believe. I was like so relieved, and that's what made me stay for the rest of the course. If they had said on the very first day, you must believe, or else you are not faithful. You will not be saved, and you will go to hell for eternity. I would have said, ciao, bye-bye. I'm out of here. I'm not going to buy that kind of stuff. And then they said, try out the meditation. Yeah, not just once, but a few times, and see if it works for you. See if it helps you understand yourself better. See if it helps you create the kind of qualities that you want to have. The meditation helps you, yeah, do it. If it doesn't help you, put it aside. Yeah. Don't reject things, just put them aside and do what helps you. So I said, I like Buddhism, you know. And really, that's what made me stay and listen to what they said and practice the meditations that they taught. Uh-huh. So the same goes for what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is really true because I think it. Yeah, and everything I think is true. Do you think like that? That everything you think is true? Most of us, yes. I'm not going to think something that's wrong. So I'm teasing you saying that. I mean, I know that not everything I think is true. Even though sometimes I still think it's true. But we have to be open-minded and question our ideas. Question what we think. See if they hold water, if they make sense or not. Okay. So now we're really going to take refuge and generate bodhicitta. Yeah. So visualize in the space in front. And when I say visualize, you're not trying to see with your eyes. You're just imagining, okay? So imagining, there's the Buddha sitting in front of you. And he's looking at you, smiling, completely accepting you with total love and compassion. And then let's turn to the Buddha for refuge, for spiritual guidance. And also, because we admire the Buddha's qualities of equal-hearted love and compassion for everybody, we want to generate that quality in our own mind, too, towards everybody. Okay, so I suppose I should say something about missing out or being left out. So I'll just share some thoughts about it. In the afternoon, when we come back, we'll have some discussion and you'll get to share your ideas about this. But I want to seed the discussion. Okay. So missing out. So when I think about my life and things I've missed out on, there's some things I've missed out on that I've wanted to do, but because of rules and regulations or policies or something going on outside of me, I couldn't do, yeah? I didn't, yeah, meet the standards or whatever, you know, it was. Okay, so there's the miss out because of something external, you know? And then there's the miss out because of my situation, okay? Like, there was a really good opportunity, but I didn't follow up on it. Yeah, I was lazy. I didn't follow up. Or I was sick. So I wasn't able to go and attend something that would have, yeah. So this two kinds of, you know, missing out. One is where, according to what's happening out there, you know, it doesn't work for me to go. But the other one is, according to me, maybe I didn't have the self-confidence to apply for a certain position, or I, like I said, I was lazy. I just, like, let it go, said I'll do it tomorrow, and then never did it. Or, you know, things like that. Make excuses for myself. Oh, yes, this would be so good, but I'm not going to fit in. Anyway, I don't really like them, so I'm not going to go. Yeah? So something coming from me that makes me miss out on different things. Yeah? It was quite interesting regarding that kind of missing out. My parents, when I was young, when they saw me just saying, oh, I don't want to do it, I don't want to try, that's too hard, you know, in other words, where I was putting up my own blocks to doing, they would very often make me do it. And it was social things, you know. I don't want to go inside. What I'm thinking is, I don't fit in with that group of people. Yeah. Or I don't think, you know, it's an art class, but I'm not going to be very good at art. Yeah. My parents, when I was young, they wouldn't let me get away with making those kind of excuses. Yeah. And my mom especially would always say, you go and you'll have a good time. No, I won't, Mom. I don't want to go. Any of you have that going on? Oh, I see some heads who know what I'm thinking about. But I was young and Mom and Dad won, so I went. And you know what was remarkable? Very often I had a good time. Yeah. I didn't really want to admit that to my parents, but Sometimes I came back feel in such a good mood that they knew I had a good time without me trying to cover it up. Yeah. So looking back on that experience, as much as I didn't like being pushed, yeah, I think looking back on it, it was actually good that they pushed me. Because otherwise, I would have missed out on a bunch of things because I was so concerned about being good, not being good enough. I was so concerned about people not liking me or not feeling, you know, that I, you know, didn't even try. I didn't even want to try certain things. Yeah. But they made me push through that, and I'm very grateful for it now. Yeah. Yes, sometimes I did have a temper tantrum about it. Yes, and my dad took out the camera and filmed the temper tantrum. Okay. I'll tell you this story. So I don't know, I was probably about 5 years old. And this was the days before, you know, we didn't have skates like you people have skates, where, you know, the wheels actually turn smoothly and the wheels are attached to the shoe that you put on. And you just get up and, you know, it's not too difficult. We had to wear our regular shoes. They didn't have those kind of skates. And you had things with wheels on it, with clamps that you had to hook on to the edge of your shoe. Yeah. And they often didn't want to stay hooked on. And the wheels didn't turn so well. Yeah. Anyway, my parents got me a pair of skates because I wanted to learn to skate. So I put on the skate. I stood up. I tried walking. You know how when you first skate, you try walking. It didn't work. I fell down. The skate fell off my foot. And I just sat there. Okay, take out the camera. Let's video this. So the family still has to this day the video of me throwing a temper tantrum because I was so frustrated because I couldn't put on that stupid skate and make it stay on my foot. Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, they continued to make me push through that. And, yeah, I had to try again with a different pair of skates. Yeah. And, you know, I learned to skate a little bit. I was never really as good as other people were. But that was okay. Okay. So that's one, you know, those two aspects of missing out that I can see. I'm just telling you this because you may see other ways of missing out that don't fall in either of these two. And so I want you to be able to bring out those other ways of missing out. And then I thought, missing out and being left out. Okay, how are they different? Well, missing out is usually because, you know, I don't fit what is needed there, or I'm scared and I'm stopping myself, yeah? Being left out is other people don't like me. They didn't invite me. Everybody else is going. I didn't get invited. What's wrong with me? I was left out. Anybody ever felt left out? Yeah, we've all felt left out, I think, at one time or another. As much as in school, you know how there's the popular kids in school, and then there's the rest of us. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, the popular kids in school, the guys are all football players. Yeah, big, athletic, very good looking. Yeah, and the girls are all beautiful. At the school I went to, yeah, the popular girls had straight blonde hair. I had, at that time in my life, short, curly, brown hair. I didn't look like the popular kids. Yeah. Actually, I was in the category of the nerds, but we didn't have that then. I like to study. I like to learn. Yeah. And I was kind of scared of those popular kids. Yeah. I'm not going to fit in with them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what they think of me. Anyway, they don't invite me to their parties. They don't ask me out. Until once, a couple of times, to my surprise, a couple of popular guys asked me out. They weren't football players. They weren't that popular. They were the next grade down. But still. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this kind of left out. Everybody else is having a good time, but yeah, I'm not invited. And then you go from that, you know, oh, I'm not invited, I don't look right. I mean, you know how it is in secondary school and in when you go to college and university. Even adults feel this way. Yeah. They're always looking, do I fit in this group? Do I fit in that group? You know, it's all just so blech. Anyway, isn't it? Yeah, it's like, ugh, I really don't like that kind of social system. So, yeah. So when I wasn't invited, then I would say, well, I don't want to go anyway. Yeah. Those kids who are really popular, I don't like them anyway. They're so stuck up. Yeah, they're so conceited, walking around with their nose in the head, in their air. Even if they invited me, I'm not going to go. Inside, I'm saying, oh, please invite me. I want to try and belong to that group of popular kids. But I would put on this thing of, I don't want to go anyway. I see by your faces, some people know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And so we make ourselves lose out. Yeah. So even if we are invited, no, I don't want to go. Meaning they're not going to like me. Okay, but you know what's very interesting is whether we are accepted in a group or not depends mostly on our attitude. Yeah. Have you ever been gone into a group of people where you don't know anybody? Yeah. Maybe like the first day of school, you don't know anybody. Or, you know, I don't know, you have to take some course, you have to do some kind of training at work, you don't know anybody. So there's different ways to approach that situation. One person says, I don't know anybody in that group. I'm sure they all know themselves. They all know each other. Nobody's going to talk to me. I'm going to be the one person just standing there all by myself. Nobody's going to talk to me. I don't fit in. But I have to go. It's like, you know, I have to go. But I dread this. Okay. And another person, yeah, same situation. They don't know anybody going into the group. They say, this is going to be really interesting. Here's all these people who I don't know who have had different life experiences from me. I want to hear about what they've experienced in their life, where they grew up, where they lived, where they've traveled, what they think about things. This is going to be really fun. Yeah. And if I see a few wallflowers, people who aren't talking to other people, I'm going to go up and talk to them because they too have had interesting experiences that I've never had, and I want to learn about them. Okay, so this is before going into the course or, you know, the dance or whatever it is. Okay, so the first person who says, I don't fit in, you know, I just can't, you know, do what they do. What kind of experience are they going to have when they go to the dance or go to the training course? What kind of experience are they going to have? Yeah, you're going, Yeah, they're going to have the experience that they have told themselves they were going to have because they're standing there or sitting there like this. So they thought, oh, nobody's going to come up and talk to me. Well, yeah, if you're standing there looking like this. Okay, they're going to have the experience that they were afraid of having because they're acting out their part. Yeah. The person who says, oh, this is going to be interesting and fun, they're going to go in and start talking to people. And they're going to have a good time. Yeah. Even though the people are different from them, they're relaxed. They can talk to people from, you know, who think different, from different social groups, different life experiences, different religions, different political views. They're okay. They can go talk to those people. So they're going to have a good time. The external situation is exactly the same for both of those people. Why do they have very different experiences going in? Yeah, it's because of what they bring to the situation, how they act. Okay, so this is really something to think about because, you know, sometimes why do we miss out or why do we are we left out? Because of what we tell ourselves about ourselves. Yeah. And about other people. So we call that self-sabotage. Yeah. Or shooting yourself in the foot. You want to go somewhere. So you shoot yourself in the foot, then you can't go. Okay? So this is really something to think about in our lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah? How much am I open and interested in other people? And if I'm not open and interested right now, maybe I better nudge myself to try. Yeah, mom and dad aren't there nudging you, but you have to nudge yourself and say, yeah, I'm going to go and try this out. Yeah, and see what it's like. And I'll learn something. Yeah, and learning is always valuable. Yeah. Whether we learn something good or bad or otherwise, it's always a valuable experience. Okay. Anybody have questions or comments so far?
My question is when we, so I understand Venerable said to nudge ourselves when we feel like we are like scared to do things, but so when we have feelings of like being left out or missing out or just negative thoughts, are there any things that we can do? Like, because maybe at some point in time we have like some ruminations or and so that's one question. And another part to it is that Venerable also mentioned to use compassion like for beings.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I feel like I'm not that compassionate to think like, oh, I want to benefit all sentient beings, even though I'm working towards it. Mm-hmm. So are there how can I expand that compassion, or like how do I think about myself not being compassionate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. So the first part of your question is, we're putting ourselves down. Yeah, is that it? The way we talk to ourselves, it's like, I'm not gonna fit in, I'm not good enough, they can all do this, I can't. Yeah. So how to remedy that way of thinking, is what I found to be very effective is, take one thought at a time. Yeah. Nobody likes me. Because whenever our self-talk is very often in black and white terms. Nobody likes me. Okay. Then to ask myself, is that true? Step back, ask myself, is that true? Nobody likes me. Yeah, is it true? Nobody likes you? That's not true, is it? Yeah, there's always people that like you. So there, okay, that's an extreme statement in which actually I'm lying to myself. When I make those extreme statements, I'm not telling the truth because there are people who like me. Another one you look at, I can't do anything right. I always make mistakes. Yeah? Really? Is that true? You can't do anything right? Is that true? Yeah? You know how to make yourself breakfast. You know how to read and write. You know a lot of things. Yeah? And you may have a talent that is very unique. So but you don't have talents that other people are looking at. So you think I can't do anything right, but that's not true. You can do a lot of things right. Yeah. People always reject me. Always? Always? I don't fit in. I never fit in. Never? Yeah. So we have to look at the thoughts we have about ourselves. And sometimes it's good to write it down and then right below it say, is that true? And all those extreme statements that we make about ourselves, to ourselves, are usually false. I would say always false, actually. Yeah. And when you think about it, it's actually rather silly to look at ourselves that way. I can't do anything right. I can brush my teeth. Oh, that's not good enough. You don't even brush your teeth the way the dentist told me to. Come on, you know? You don't need to be the perfect one. And there's many things we can do right, because each person has their own unique set of qualities and talents. And our job is to figure out what our special qualities are and then give them to the world. The world needs people with special qualities. Okay, let me give you an example. Okay, I'm going to use you as an example. Okay. So he is very good at repairing things. He's very good with computer stuff. Very good if lighting and electricity and AV, anything with wires, he is very good at. Yeah. When I was young, when something would break, I was told, don't try and fix it. You're only going to break it more. So right from the get-go, I thought, you know, I can't fix anything. And anything with wires, I don't know where the wires go. Yeah. And I just, you know, this is beyond me. And when I was in school, you know, way back with the dinosaurs, the girls studied home ec. The boys studied shop. So the girls, I learned to cook and sew. The boys learned to deal with tools and build things and fix things. I was educationally deprived. Yeah? And so I, you know, you give me something to fix, forget it. You know, what do I do when I have computer problems? I try a little bit to solve it, but I never can. So I call him and he sits down and the computer, which wouldn't do anything for me, works for him. Okay, I know that by now. Yeah. Yeah. We have different talents. Yeah. And it's really good that we have different talents because we're part of a community at our monastery and everybody has different talents. So everybody can contribute and everybody does contribute. And there's nobody who cannot contribute because they don't know anything or can't do anything right. Okay? Sometimes the cooks experiment. Yeah, instead of following a recipe, they want to go, vegan. They want to go vegan. And, you know, no dairy products. And they don't, so no dairy and no gluten. Yeah. So they try and make muffins with no dairy and no gluten. Yeah. That's what I think of the muffins. But then we had one lady come and She says, oh, when you bake something and you want to be gluten-free and dairy-free, you can't just substitute other things for butter and milk and, you know, whole wheat flour. You have to get a recipe that's especially for gluten-free and dairy-free. So she's going to send those to the monastery. So maybe then our cooks will follow a recipe and we'll get something that tastes good when they bake it. Yeah. But then I also have to recognize that people have different tastes than me, because somehow those muffins that I won't even pick them up from the line anymore, because I know what they're going to taste like. But they vanish. Everybody else eats them. I don't know why. Yeah. And people have different tastes. Oh, yes. One of the tastes is you put vinegar and orange juice on top of a salad. Or sometimes you bake with vinegar and orange juice. You ever had cookies made with vinegar and orange juice? Yeah. But the people who bake them think they taste really good. Okay. Yeah. You like them, huh? Okay. You cook and you eat. Yeah. But that's okay. That, you know, just because I don't like something doesn't mean it doesn't taste good for other people. Okay. So it's a free world. They can cook what they want and put orange juice and vinegar in the same dish if they want to, and eat it because they like it. That's okay. Yeah. So to enlarge our mind, this is the second part of your question, developing compassion. Yeah. To enlarge our mind, not everybody thinks like me. Not everybody likes the same things I like. And that's okay. That's okay. They can still be really wonderful people if I make the effort to talk to them. If I make the effort to banish my judgments and make an effort to have a good conversation with everybody. And I did that once, you know, I was at a big conference style thing. There were about 300 people. It was lasting three, 4 months. And I said, I am going to have a good conversation with everybody in this group. I gave myself that assignment. Nudge myself. And I found that if I really tried, I could find something of mutual interest to talk about with everybody. Or even if we had different views on a topic that we were both interested in, that was okay too. It was good for me to hear the different viewpoints. Okay? So that helps us open our mind and have some compassion for other people. Mm-hmm.